Thank you for coming to the colloquium, and thank you for this opportunity to talk about our recent results. So in condensed matter physics, our goal is usually to understand collective behaviors of systems that have many, many degrees of freedom. And unlike quantum gravity, in condensed matter physics, we have the microscopic description of the system. However, in practice, it is impossible to, say, solve the full Schrödinger equation for 10 to the 23 interacting particles, simply because the Hilbert space is too big. And even though we know the exact wave function, the full many-body wave function would be too complicated to be useful to us. Therefore, one strategy that we can take is to focus on the low energy sector of the theory and look for some organizing principles that emerge for the low energy degree freedom that captures the universal properties of the system that are insensitive to the microscopic details. And sometimes what emerges low energy degree freedom can be strikingly different from the microscopic electronic degree freedom, and different kinds of low energy effective theories may emerge. And of course, the form of the low energy effective theories are different depending on what phases we are addressing. The simplest one would be a trivial insulator where there's no IR degrees freedom at all. Maybe the next simplest one is topological states where there's a gap, at least in the bulk, but usually there are some finite number of low energy degrees freedom, or if there's a gapless boundaries, then low energy degrees freedoms live in lower dimensional space. And there are genuinely gapless states. And if, say, a Lorentz symmetry emerges in the low energy limit, then the low energy effective theory is described by some kinds of relativistic field theory. In that case, there are some discrete set of points in the momentum space where gapless modes are located. On the other hand, in metals, you have extended Fermi surface, and there are infinitely many gapless modes in the momentum space, and therefore the system has very soft response to external perturbations, and many there can be very non-trivial IR physics. And this talk is about understanding low energy properties of metals based on low energy effective field theories. So let's start with simplest types of metal where there's no interaction. And suppose I have finite density of fermions, and then we can easily diagonalize the many-body Hamiltonian. And the many-body eigenstates are labeled by the occupation number at each momentum and spin. And the ground state is given by filling the single particle state up to some Fermi energy Kf, because these are fermions. And then excited state can be created by either deforming the shape of the Fermi surface or creating some electron pockets or hole pockets outside or inside the Fermi surface.
Just ask a question. If you go back to the previous slide,
yeah,
the graph.
Yeah.
You say highly entangled?
Oh, this I mean, if you say measure the ground state entanglement in real space, then metal has the largest entanglement.
Why would you measure it in real space?
Yeah, because entanglement is a basis-dependent statement. But this is just.
But if I just consider perfect metal free.
Free form, then there would be no entanglement in momentum space.
Yeah, so yeah. why? So
Yeah, so here, this is the in real space. And why is it useful?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's usually we care about like correlations in real space. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and there's a locality in the real space.
I see.
Yeah, so.
So it's just because of the...
This does not necessarily reflect the difficulty
I see.
In solving the problem.
I see.
But this is one measure of counting the number of gapless degrees freedom in the system.
Yes, about this graph also. By relativistic states, you mean just linear dispersion relation or really kind of Lorentz symmetry is important here?
Yeah, here I meant a linearly dispersion, but you can have different types of dispersion with discrete points in the momentum space. You could have lifted dispersion.
Right. Yeah. So there is no reason to really.
Yeah. So they are like in between these two. Yeah. Okay. So, but if you turn on interactions, then electrons begin to scatter and change their single particle momentum state, and as a result, shape of the Fermi surface is no longer preserved, and there is a non-trivial quantum fluctuation of the Fermi surface. And nonetheless, in a class of metals, if you measure low energy properties like specific heat and magnetic susceptibility, the low temperature properties are remarkably similar to those of non-interacting fermions. And based on this observation, Landau, long time ago, proposed that maybe in the low energy limit, the many body eigenstates can be still labeled by occupation number of some single particle states. And these single particles are no longer the bare electrons, but they are dressed electrons dressed by particle fluctuations, so their mass will be renormalized. Nonetheless, this particle will still have long lifetime and will have the same charge as electron and same statistics. And more recently, this proposal has been more systematically understood within the framework of renormalization group. And this so-called quasi-particle paradigm, based on the existence of well-defined single-particle excitation, has been remarkably successful in explaining behaviors of many simple metals. However, in nature, there are many different kinds of metals which are not explained by the Fermi liquid theory, and we collectively called non-Fermi liquid. This is a reflection of our ignorance of how many different kinds of non-Fermi liquids can exist and what their properties are. And we are beginning to understand some examples of non-Fermi liquid state in this landscape. So one way of obtaining non-Fermi liquid is by tuning metal toward quantum critical point. So imagine that system undergoes some spontaneous symmetry breaking as you tune certain parameters of the Hamiltonian. Example could be some spontaneous magnetic order. And then if that transition is a continuous transition, then as you approach the critical point, the correlation length of the order parameter become very large. And this order parameter being dynamical will fluctuate very slowly in space and time. And then as electrons propagate in the background of slowly fluctuating order parameters, this electron will undergo many scattering with the collective mode at low energies. And this destroys the coherence of the single particle excitations. And that's one way of destroying the Fermi liquid. And experimentally, if you measure some thermodynamic property or transport properties, you see some strange temperature dependencies that are beyond the Landau Fermi liquid theory. So So more theoretically, what happens is that there is some gapless collective excitations in the system at the critical point because of the order parameter have infinite correlation lengths. And that collective excitations can scatter electrons near the Fermi surface. And such scattering effectively cause fluctuations of the shape of the Fermi surface. And this very soft object, this Fermi surface, can undergo very non-trivial strong quantum fluctuations, and this destroyed quasi-particle. And our goal is to understand universal properties of those fuzzy Fermi surface that is subject to strong quantum fluctuations. In terms of space dimension, 2 plus 1 dimension is the most interesting dimension, because unlike 1 plus 1D, in 2 plus 1D, you can have a really extended Fermi surface, where 1D, you have only Fermi points. Also, 2 plus 1D is below the upper critical dimension, so usually quantum fluctuations become very important at low energy. Therefore, it is a 2 plus 1D where the softness of the quantum the Fermi surface and the strong quantum fluctuation can result in very non-trivial quantum states of matter. And in 2 plus 1D, usually because quantum fluctuations are strong in the low energy, we cannot directly use any perturbative method. And if you want to reliably address the question, you need some small parameter to tame the quantum fluctuation. But more recently, there are some examples where even non-perturbative solutions are beginning to be understood. So that will be the main focus. But let me tell you a few things about so-called perturbative approaches.
Can I just ask, are there experimental systems which are 2 plus 1?
Yeah, so for example, these systems are, say, iron nictites are layered materials. So it's quasi two-dimensional system. Of course, the full system is 2D, but coupling between layers are relatively weak. So that is essentially two-dimensional. And yeah, also high TC cuprates is another example of quasi two-dimensional materials. Okay, so suppose I try to tame quantum fluctuation by deforming the theory, and one method that that works very well in relativistic field theory is so-called 1 over n expansion, where you pretend that the fermions comes in large number of flavors, and then usually in here n represents some vector flavor. Instead of spin up and spin down, you pretend that there's n kinds of flavor. And then in relativistic field theory, we know in the large n limit, usually the theory approaches to the Gaussian fixed point, and we can use 1 over n expansion. However, in the presence of Fermi surface, we know that in the low energy limit, somehow the theory behaves like a matrix large n theory. So, and we know matrix large n is very different from vector large n. And large n limit is quite non-trivial. There are still strong quantum fluctuation that is not Gaussian. And understanding general non-Fermi liquid in the large n limit is still an open question. And we suspect that low energy theory is some kind of, can be string theory in the sense that there is some genus expansion. And basic picture is that although you have a vector n flavor, the angle around the Fermi surface plays the role of some additional internal index, which promote the vector field into some matrix fields. Also, another approach is to, say, try to continuously tune the dimension of the system toward the upper critical dimension. And we can try to do so-called epsilon expansion, where epsilon is the deviation in dimension from the upper critical dimension. But in relativistic field theory, we learn that usually those epsilon expansion coincide with the loop expansion. The quantum fluctuations are organized in terms of the number of loops in relativistic field theory, but in theories with Fermi surface, that intuition actually often breaks down. And even to the leading order in epsilon, there are some higher loop graphs that remains important. And this is due to the fact that the system is so soft. There are so many gapless modes in the near the Fermi surface, and IR fluctuations are very, very important, and it's very hard to tame them. And mathematically, sometimes as a result, you have some expansion in some fractional powers of the coupling, which, yes?
This first statement, is it a conjecture or is it a rigorous?
This first statement? Yes. Yeah, it is known.
It is known.
Yeah. Okay, and then, so I will focus on 2+1 dimensional theory from now on. And roughly there are two different types of non-Fermi liquid depending on the momentum carried by the collective mode. So if the collective mode carries, the order parameter has zero momentum, like some limitic order parameter that breaks the internal rotation symmetry but not the translational symmetry, or if you have some gauge field coupled to those finite density of fermion, in that case, typical momentum carried by this collective mode is very small, and therefore, any fermions near the Fermi surface can either absorb or emit that collective mode and scatter onto other points on the Fermi surface. Therefore, the entire Fermi surface is subject to strong coupling with the collective mode. And we say all the Fermi surface become hot in the sense that they sense this quantum fluctuations of the order parameter. Whereas if the order parameter carries some non-zero momentum, which happens when you have some spatial modulation in your order, like spin density wave or charge density wave. In that case, the soft mode also carries momentum of that large of that momentum, and therefore electrons are scattered from one point to another point on the Fermi surface by those collective mode. And as a result, in the low energy limit, only those fermions that are close to so-called the hotspots, which are connected by this wave vector, are remains strongly coupled with the order parameter. So in this talk, I will focus on the second kind of non-Fermi liquid. In particular, we are going to consider the non-Fermi liquid that arises from some spin density wave quantum phase transition. And that is actually the most common form of quantum phase transition that is observed in real systems. And this work that I'm going to tell you from now on is based on the works done with my students. Shubik is a former PhD student who is in Tallahassee, and Andres and Peter are both at PI now. So let me just remind you what anti-ferromagnetic order is. It's some pattern of spontaneous symmetry breaking where spin rotational symmetry is broken, and spins acquire some non-zero expectation value along some direction. And then there's some spatial modulation with some wave vector Q. In this example, this Q is say pi, and then this direction of the spin flips the sign as you move either in the x direction or y direction. So this is a pattern of anti-ferromagnetic order. And this kind of spontaneous symmetry breaking can arise within matter. So within matter, we have this gapless fermions forming the Fermi surface like this. And then when there's no anti-ferromagnetic order, it's just a normal paramagnetic Fermi liquid. And then if this matter, if the anti-ferromagnetic order forms within this matter, then on the other side, we have a non-zero expectation value of this order parameter, And because it also breaks the translational invariance, the structure in the momentum forming surface is also reconstructed. But our interest is in this quantum critical point where this anti-ferromagnetic order is just about to form. And they become very soft. So from field theory language, as we tune the system toward the critical point, we are tuning the mass of the collective mode to zero. And then at the critical point, we have a system where the fermions near the Fermi surface are coupled with gapless boson that describes this anti-ferromagnetic order parameter. And this is the field theory that has been written long time ago that describes the anti-ferromagnetic phase transition in metal. So as I said, because the order parameter carries non-zero momentum, there are these hotspots which remain strongly coupled with the collective mode in the low energy limit. So the relevant degrees of freedom in the low energy limit are the fermionic excitations near this hotspot. In this case, there are 8 of them, and the collective mode. Okay. So here, the first line in the action represent the kinetic energy of those fermions near each hotspot. And hotspots are labeled by this index L and M. So, and then this is the energy of those fermions near each hotspot. And here, momentum K is the momentum measured with respect to each hotspot. Okay? So when K is zero, that means they are right on the hotspot. And then this phi is the anti-ferromagnetic order parameter that has three spin components. And again, this Q is the momentum measured with respect to the big Q wave vector of the order. Okay. So these two are the kinetic energy of fermion and boson collective mode. And then this term describes the process where, say, fermion near one spot, say, 1 minus, absorb, say, collective mode, and then get scattered to another hotspot, say, 1 plus. Okay? And this kind of scattering process occurs between these 4 pairs of hotspots. That's the cubic Yukawa coupling. And also, there could be interactions among the collective modes that is consistent with the symmetry. And this theory has the following 4 parameters. The first one is the Fermi velocity of the fermion. And because of the discrete rotational symmetry and the inversion symmetry, it's enough to specify the Fermi velocity near one hotspot. Then all other hotspots are related to each other. So in general, say at this hotspot, the Fermi surface is not perpendicular to the wave vector carried by the order parameter. There's some angle here. And then the local Fermi velocity is perpendicular to that local Fermi surface. And therefore, this local Fermi surface is, in general, not parallel to the wave vector of the order parameter. And we can look at the component of the Fermi velocity parallel to the wave vector and component that is perpendicular to the wave vector. And we can always rescale momentum to set one of the velocity to 1. And in this case, the Fermi velocity parallel to the wave vector has been set to 1. Okay? And then this V represents the Fermi velocity, which is perpendicular to the wave vector. So in general, this V is not zero without fine tuning. If V was zero, that means this part of the Fermi surface and this part of the Fermi surface are both perpendicular to the wave vector. And that means these two Fermi surfaces are parallel to each other locally. And if that happens, we say there's a nesting. And when there's a nesting, actually, many points on the Fermi surface are connected by the same wave vector. And we expect large infrared singularity usually. And then this c here is the velocity of the collective mode, which is in general different from the Fermi velocity because there's no Lorentz symmetry. And then this g is the equal coupling between the fermion and then the collective mode. And this u is the coupling between the collective modes. So there are these four parameters of the theory. And as I said, in 2 plus 1D, there's quantum fluctuation become important at low energy. In the language of renormalization group, these parameters, the coupling strengths, are relevant perturbation to the Gaussian fixed point. So although if it was very small at high energy, as you go to low energy, this coupling grows. And in general, we cannot trust the expansion, perturbative expansion in powers of this coupling. Therefore, in order to understand this theory in a controlled way, we first have to try to tame quantum fluctuation in some way. And there are different ways to tame quantum fluctuation proposed in the literatures, but we have to be careful because as we deform the theory such that we can solve the theory, we shouldn't lose some important feature of the theory, or we shouldn't add some new feature that are absent in the original theory. Okay? So, for example, the one proposal is to say modify the dispersion of the collective mode. So initially, the collective mode has a two derivative action, say this q squared term, and then if you make this power 2 to a smaller number, like 1 plus epsilon, then of course at low energy, this collective mode becomes stiffer. So thereby you suppress the quantum fluctuation. But if you do that, you lose an important feature of the theory, which is locality. Because this fractional power kinetic term in real space represent some non-local corner. And then because of the non-locality, in this theory, this boson cannot acquire any anomalous dimension. Whereas in the original theory, we know that the anomalous dimensions are large for the boson. That's why we don't want to deform this much. Somehow it tamed too much. And another method is to use so-called the dimensional regularization, where you increase the space dimension in a continuous way and approach the upper critical dimension. And unlike relativistic field theory, there are different ways to do that. The most naive one is to increase the dimension of space at the same time you increase the dimension of the Fermi surface. Okay, so you start with a two-dimensional momentum space, which has a one-dimensional Fermi surface. And then you go to, say, three space dimension, which support, say, two-dimensional spherical Fermi surface. You can do that. However, if you do that, you ended up adding some features that are not present in the original theory, which can be understood in the following way. So in the original problem, as I said, in the low energy limit, only these hotspots remain strongly coupled with the collective mode in the low energy limit. But if you have, say, two-dimensional spherical Fermi surface, then this ordering vector can fit in inside the Fermi surface at many points. As a result, you end up having hot manifold. There are one-dimensional manifold that are strongly coupled with the collective mode. And then the size of this hot manifold now enters in the low-energy theory. And actually, low-energy theory is dictated by that new scale of the theory. And it's like you add some features that are not intrinsic in the original problem. So therefore, our choice of regularization scheme is so-called co-dimensional regularization scheme, where you increase the dimension of space, but you keep the dimension of the Fermi surface to be one. is like you embed one-dimensional manifold of gapless point into higher dimensional momentum space, okay? And there you can keep the locality and you don't introduce some spurious scale that is absent in the original problem. And so again, in general, you can think of, you can tune the dimension of the space and dimension of the Fermi surface independently. So the original theory is here, where you have a one-dimensional Fermi surface embedded in two-dimensional momentum space, and you can deform the theory in any direction, theoretically. But from the consideration that I just mentioned, it is best to approach this theory from here, where you still have a one-dimensional Fermi surface, but now embedded in the three-dimensional space. This is so-called semi-metal, where you have a line of gapless point in three dimension. And then again, the three space dimension is the upper critical dimension. And you can use this deviation as a small parameter to access this interesting theory. So, and it turns out that it's not quite, it is quite non-trivial even to understand this toy problem in proper way, again, due to the fact that you have a large number of gapless mode, which enhance the naively higher loop diagrams even in the small epsilon limit. But if you do it, then this is what we see. First thing we see is the emergent locality. So as I said, in the original Fermi surface, these 2 points that are connected by the collective modes are not parallel to each other because Fermi surface have some finite angle like this. And that angle is parameterized by one component of the Fermi velocity, which I call V. And then as you go to low energy, these fermions are scattered to this point and then scattered back to this point. And then there's a strong mixing between fermion here and fermion here. And as a result, Fermi velocity become more similar to each other as we go to low energy. That's why, as you go to low energy, the Fermi velocity become, the Fermi surface become locally parallel to each other. So at least locally, it looks like the system lose the dispersion along one direction. So it become more like a one-dimensional system, at least in the scaling limit in the, near the Fermi surface, near the hotspot. That's what this V goes to zero means. And as the Fermi surface become locally nested, the particle excitation, that connect these 2 points on, of the Fermi surface also become dispersionless because the Fermi surface, the particle excitation, energy of particle excitation is again independent of the momentum along the Fermi surface. And as a result, the boson velocity also flows to zero. This, so in some sense, boson get more local as you go to low energy. But they flows, this velocity flows to zero in a very specific way. There's some emergent hierarchy in the flow of the velocity where this Fermi velocity V flows to zero much faster than the boson velocity. Okay? And then as the Fermi surface get locally nested, there's large particle excitation, and they become more effective in screening the interaction with the collective mode. And as a result, the coupling constant, the Yukawa coupling, also flows to zero. So in some sense, everything flows to zero, but in a very specific way. For example, this ratio between the Yukawa coupling to the velocity, which is the real parameter that controls the expansion, flows to order of epsilon within the epsilon expansion. Okay, so in some sense, the as the system get more local at low energy, interactions are also renormalized such that it is balanced with the emergent locality of the system. So this is the intuition that we learned from this controlled epsilon expansion, And now we are going to use this intuition to tackle the original problem in 2 plus 1 dimension. So in order to make a progress, we first make an ansatz based on the intuition that we learned near the upper critical dimension. So those ansatz, in particular, have the following information. So in 2 plus 1D, unlike 4 minus epsilon dimension, now the coupling constant measured in the unit of this velocity will be order of 1. So it's a strongly coupled theory. And therefore, we expect in the low energy, the interaction will play a dominant role. Okay, that's the first information. And also, from this calculation, we found that the collective mode acquires some anomalous dimension that is order of epsilon. And as epsilon goes to 1, that anomalous dimension becomes order of 1, which means that the collective mode boson will be heavily dressed by the interaction. Okay? That's the second intuition. And then finally, we assume that even in 2 plus 1D, without proof for now, we assume that still some sense of locality emerges in the low energy limit, and V and C will flow to 0. We first assume that. But with the hierarchy where V flows to 0 much faster than C. Okay, so far, this is an ansatz. This has been established only near 4 dimension using this epsilon expansion. But now we are going to assume this is true in 2 plus 1D. And then we are going to check that this ansatz is actually self-consistent. So what does this assumption imply? So we first go back to this theory in 2 plus 1D. And usually, when we do the perturbative computation, we treat the kinetic energy as marginal operator. And we treat the coupling as a perturbation to the Gaussian fixed point. However, that strategy is supposed to fail in strongly interacting theory because interactions play more important role than kinetic energy. Therefore, we would like to include the interaction as an upfront. Okay, so we are going to change the scale. And then in the new scale, we are going to take the interaction to be the most important term in the whole action. So we are going to choose the scale such that this term is marginal. So in the Gaussian scaling, the kinetic term was marginal. Interactions are relevant, right? Now we are going to change the scale such that interactions are marginal. And then that means some of the kinetic term has to be made irrelevant. And then we have a choice whether we can make fermion to be irrelevant or boson kinetic term to be irrelevant. But from this controlled expansion, we learn that boson acquires large anomalous dimension compared to fermion. Therefore, that physically means that bare dynamics of the boson is hardly matter because boson is heavily dressed by the particle excitation. Therefore, we will choose the scaling such that fermion kinetic term and this interaction term are marginal. And then that uniquely fixes the scaling dimension of fields and frequency, momentum, et cetera. And then, yeah.
So because it looks like another option would be that high derivative terms in the kinetic term, right? Because Q squared, C squared is small, and this Lagrangian was written like derivative expression.
Yes.
That means now the term Q to the 4.
They are even more irrelevant. They are even more irrelevant in the small Q limit.
So the naively they are more irrelevant in the small Q limit. But here C is very small, and there is no reason why.
No, what I'm saying is even these two derivative terms are irrelevant because the dynamics of the boson is generated from the particle excitation.
Mm-hmm.
That become more important than this local kinetic term.
And
yes,
those terms also have similar normalization.
Right. The higher derivative terms are even more irrelevant at low energies. Usually, kinetic terms are not irrelevant, right? But here I'm saying kinetic terms are irrelevant compared to the interaction. That's why I dropped this.
Right.
Does that suggest you should solve the theory in real space rather than Fourier space?
But they are not completely local because dynamics of the boson will be generated by the particle excitation. So another way of saying is that boson propagate mainly as a particle hole bubble. That's the main way of propagating for the boson. So boson itself doesn't go too far without
it goes through from you.
Yeah, before encountering decaying into particle excitation.
Because it's not completely obvious because if I started with q to the 4 gradient term, that would also change the scaling count, right? It would change how one calculates.
Those higher derivative terms are important at UV when q is large, right? But as you go to low energy, they are obviously less important than this two derivative term.
No, that's not the case. I don't know examples where it's so because. If coefficient in front of q squared is small, then it may be that low energy theory. Essentially, you get something like Lipschitz.
No, what I'm saying is that
with different scaling
this is unimportant because this is unimportant because smaller powers of q are generated from fermionic sector, like q linear term, for example. Yeah, and I understand it's not obvious, right? But this is answers for now. So we are going to drop the entire action for the boson. And we are going to, and again, sorry. And then this requirement that I keep the kinetic term and the nuclear coupling as a marginal term, uniquely fix the scaling dimension of frequency relative to the momentum, and then scaling dimension of the boson and fermion field. And here, the scaling dimension of fermion is same as the scaling dimension of fermion near the Gaussian fixed point. However, the scaling dimension of boson is order of one different from the Gaussian scaling, which means that boson is heavily dressed by interaction in this answer. Okay, and then we drop the kinetic term for the boson, and therefore this is the minimal theory, and which have only kinetic term for the fermion, and then the Yukawa coupling, okay? And because I don't have the kinetic term for the boson, now I am free to rescale the boson to make this Yukawa coupling to whatever I want within our convenience. And we know that from epsilon expansion, as we go to low energy, this Yukawa coupling will be balanced with this Fermi velocity. And in 2 plus 1D, they will become order of 1. Therefore, it is natural to rescale such that this Yukawa coupling G is proportional to square root of the velocity V. So that's our choice. Okay? And it turns out that this choice is actually convenient. So therefore, this theory has only one parameter, one dimensionless parameter, which is the V, the Fermi velocity. And because there is no kinetic term for the boson, you may say boson is completely local. However, dynamics of the boson is generated by this particle hole excitation. And this is the exact, say, Dyson equation that relates the propagator of the boson to the exact propagator of the fermion and then the vortex correction. Of course, this is formal and it's hard to solve this exactly because this vortex function and the dress fermion propagator themselves depends on the unknown boson propagator. So they have to be solved self-consistently. Now our assumption about the emergent locality and hierarchy in velocity plays the role. So we first assume that this is the case. And also we first make an ansatz for the propagator of the dressed propagator of the boson, consistent with the scaling. For example, in the earlier scaling, the frequency and momentum scales in the same way. Therefore, I have a same power for frequency and momentum. And also, I have only fourfold rotation symmetry. Therefore, I have same coefficient in front of qx and qy. And also, this power one here is dictated by the scaling dimension of the boson field. So this is one form of the dressed boson propagator that is consistent with the scaling. It's not the only one. It's one. But we first assume this is the case. And furthermore, we use the assumption that in the low energy limit, the Fermi velocity is much smaller than 1. Also, this boson velocity is much smaller than 1. But there is this hierarchy. Again, this is based on the intuition that we learned from this epsilon expansion. Okay? So this, we first assume that. And we assume this form of the dressed propagator and assume this hierarchy in the velocity. Okay? This is an ansatz.
But then you deduce the formula for C?
Sorry, yeah.
You deduce the formula for C. That's not an ansatz. The C of V is what you calculate.
So this is... it is supposed, so V is the only parameter of the theory.
Right.
So therefore, C is supposed to be a function of V.
Right.
So this is what we need to determine self-consistently.
Yeah, but so, that's the result.
So here I'm assuming that C is some function of V,
right.
But that function is something that has satisfied this hierarchy in the limit V is small.
Right.
So this is something that we need to check from the Dyson
theory. I'm just asking if the next line is what you calculate.
This one, yes. Sorry, that's right. That's what.
Yes.
That's the result.
Okay.
So this is not part of ansatz here.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. So our ansatz is this form and this hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can show that when this hierarchy is satisfied, this Dyson equation is reduced to this equation. Okay, this is more technical thing, but you can prove this is the case. But it is still non-trivial in the sense that this vertex correction itself depends on the fully dressed boson propagator. So in the perturbative language, this still includes infinite series of diagrams, not all, but particular infinite series of diagrams in this self-consistent equation. And if you, and in particular beyond the RPA diagrams, and if you use this ansatz to compute this, and then indeed, you get the propagator of the same form, which is basically dictated by the scaling. And then you obtain some self-consistent equation for the boson velocity. And if you solve the self-consistent equation, then this is the answer. So what we have done is that if this hierarchy is satisfied, and this is indeed solve the Dyson equation. Okay? And indeed, when V is small, C is small, C is still much larger than V because it only depends on V as a square root. So therefore, this ansatz is consistent. But I haven't yet shown that V actually flows to zero. So that's the remaining thing to show. So here for now, I have assumed that V is small. And then in that limit, Dyson equation gets simpler, and you can solve it. And then C is also smaller and satisfy the hierarchy. And then
all of the diagrams are suppressed by powers of V.
Yes.
Or C.
Yeah. Powers of some square root of V.
Mm-hmm.
Positive powers of V. And then in the limit that there's a hierarchy, you can show that only these diagrams contribute to the renormalization of the velocity V. And if you compute it, this is the beta function. So indeed, as the energy become smaller, the velocity flows to zero logarithmically. So what this means is that if initial velocity V was small, then this procedure is reliable, and it predicts V become even smaller at low energy. So therefore, the approximation become more and more accurate as we go to low energy. Therefore, asymptotically, in the low energy limit, our ansatz become exact. So indeed, you can compute the deviation of the scaling dimension from the scaling that we assumed, from the interaction-driven scaling. So these are the correction, anomalous dimension, with respect to that interaction-driven scaling, which already have an order of one anomalous dimension compared to the Gaussian theory. And then indeed, those anomalous dimensions are controlled by this ratio V over C. And as V flows to zero, C flows to zero such that V over C becomes smaller and smaller. Therefore, in the low energy limit, this ansatz is exact. So, however, if you look at real physical observables, there's a deviation from the form that is dictated by the scaling, because at any finite energy scale, V over C hasn't yet quite flowed to zero. So there is some residual effect of renormalization. And if you include it, say this is the form of the two-point function for the fermion. So here, this omega is the exponent that you expect from the scaling. Okay? However, there are this correction f of psi, f of z, which has this form. And then these corrections are not as big as any power law correction, but is stronger than any logarithmic correction. Okay? And we call this super logarithmic correction. And the existence of this large correction comes from the fact that this ratio v over c flows to zero, but flows to zero very slowly. It flows to zero sublogarithmically. So this sublogarithmic flow of v over c results in super logarithmic correction to the physical observable, like the spectral function. And if you take the imaginary part of this Green's function, you get the spectral function. And indeed, there's no quasi-particle peak. And it's a form of non-forming liquid. And this is, the form of the two-point function for the collective mode, which can be measured from neutron scattering. Again, this omega linear term and Q linear terms are the one that is expected from the scaling. And then there are this super logarithmic correction, again, coming from the slow decay of this ratio of velocities. And the specific form is not important, but the idea is that there's a main scaling exponent, and then there are some sublimiting correction coming from the slow decay of the velocity ratios. And the thermodynamic properties like specific heat can be also computed. And to our surprise, even though there is this extended Fermi surface, actually the specific heat is dominated by the collective mode, which are defined at one point on the momentum space. And that's because the collective modes are very incoherent. So therefore, at a given momentum, the energy of the mode is not well defined. So therefore, there's a large probability for mode with large momentum to have some spectral weight even at low energy.
Is this the mode of the boson?
This is everything.
Is dominating? Yeah. What is dominating?
The bosons. Bosons are dominating. Okay. Yeah. So this is something that is quite unexpected. Okay. And then if you go to really low temperature limit, then what happens is that the fermions away from the hotspot, which are Fermi liquid like normal matter, they now undergo the superconducting BCS instability. So therefore, in the low temperature limit, the system will be superconducting. So and then the TC for the superconductivity will be determined by the bare attractive interaction among those cold electrons away from the hotspot, and also some dressed interaction coming from the critical mode. And therefore, TC is not going to be universal. So how large the TC is going to be is material specific. Mm-hmm. And whether there is a large temperature window in which we can observe this critical scaling is also specific to materials. And we hope that at least some materials we can maybe test this scaling. Okay, so let me summarize. So our goal has been to understand the non-Fermi liquid matters using low energy effective field theories. And one could tame the quantum fluctuations using this co-dimensional regularization method. And actually, this gave us a lot of useful insight. And based on this insight, we were able to guess the non-perturbative form, non-perturbative solution. and check that actually indeed that non-perturbable solution works in this anti-ferromagnetic non-foam liquid in the 2 plus 1 dimension. And I think for a long time in this field, the theory has been far behind the experiments. But now it's time that we ask experimentalists to measure more precisely to compare with the predictions. OK, thank you for your attention.
The linear resistivity?
Yeah, we haven't done the transport calculation yet because transport are sensitive to other extrinsic effect like impurities. Yeah, but that is something that needs to be done for this theory.
What is the way to think about in terms of the synthetic energy behavior which you find with low energies? It's relativistic scale invariant theory, it's not even scale invariant.
There is a scale in there, but there's no conformal symmetry.
So it's So it's some energy scale invariant theory.
Yeah, it's a scale invariant with z equal 1 scaling. Uh-huh. But there's no Lorentz symmetry or conformal symmetry here.
Mm-hmm. You just there's no
scale. There's a scale invariant and some discrete rotation symmetry.
Mm-hmm. So no value of boost for
that. Yeah, I don't, yeah.
So can you say more precisely what your prediction is?
These are the predictions. So for example, people say people measure specific heat and they reported deviation from T-linear behavior by some log correction.
Right.
But now by some T times
T log
T.
Not log to the half. You've got log to the half with another
part. Actually, there is the additional exponential to the log T.
Right.
So if you expand this naively, then you can have T log T as well. But I think the current experiments has been done only for some small temperature window. So it may not be sensitive to precise form of this deviation. So, but this is our prediction. Mm-hmm. And also, the spin structure factor is something you can measure from neutron scattering. Mm-hmm. So you send neutron, and by measuring the momentum and energy of the scattered neutron, you can measure the spin excitations at certain energy and momentum, which directly proves this thing.
Right.
And also, this two-point function of the fermion can be, again, measured from photo emission spectroscopy.
These have not been measured at all
not
yet?
Not yet.
I see. So even the functional form would be surprising? I mean, if I set all the logs equal to constants, would anyone be surprised?
I think for a long time, from uncontrolled approximation, people believe that this theory has a z equal 2, which is completely different behavior at low energy.
So even this form is really quite easily distinguishable from what people expected?
I think so, yeah. I think maybe this one is the easiest.
Right.
Because you will see some z equal 1 scaling between frequency and
moment. So that's
moment.
Directly testing your scaling assumption.
That's right, yeah.
Beautiful. When will it be done?
So one of my colleagues at McMaster are trying to perform neutron scattering to one of the electron-doped cube plates, which people believe that there is some anti-ferromagnetic quantum critical point. Yeah.
So they may see.
Then they may see.
Right.
Sounds like how can you tell that that in the specific heat that the bosonic degrees of freedom are the ones that dominate over the fermionic one?
Of course, they are strongly interacting with each other, so we cannot cleanly separate the contribution from boson and fermion. Yeah. So you're right. In this particular term comes from this one loop boson vacuum diagram with the dressed propagator. But it's not purely, it may be misleading to call purely bosonic contribution, because mm-hmm. this boson is highly dressed by pi core excitation.
There are simulations of models with similar low energy effective theories.
Yeah.
Is there any hope that one could get in the right regimes to have a sort of theoretical check of these ideas?
Yeah, so there are some Monte Carlo simulation to this model. But currently, I don't think the system size is big enough to be able to look at this kind of scaling behavior yet. But they are working.
Or if there are no more questions, let's say.